I'm John Batzer, John Avlon of Newsweek and CNN, and Tegan Goddard of The Political Wire are here with me in studio. 45 million Medicare beneficiaries, of one of which happily is my mother, enjoy the security of free health care and its no-questions-asked payments. That is at the center of the political contest. I'll use that polite metaphor right now. With regard, Paul Ryan, the budget chairman of the Republican-dominated majority in the House of Representatives for the 112th, and the President of the United States, whom we believe is going to make remarks about Medicare. That's a big part of the entitlement puzzle for the future with regard in his speech in the next 24 hours. We're joined now by Joseph Rego, who writes often on health care for the Wall Street Journal editorial board. Joe, a very good evening to you. You recently in the Wall Street Journal, an editorial stated thus: the reality that Mr. Ryan has recognized is that Medicare can't be fixed with nips and tucks. All very clever. It refers to that TV show I never watched, but in any event, it's plastic surgery. Mr. Ryan's nips and tucks. Is that the White House? Are we anticipating nips and tucks from the president? Good evening, Joe.
Good evening, John. It will be interesting to see what President Obama says, because, you know, if you remember over the 2 years of healthcare debate prior to the new plan, the mantra was healthcare reform is entitlement reform, and I think what we've seen from Paul Ryan is a credible version of that statement.
Healthcare reform is entitlement reform, meaning that the healthcare package advanced by the Democratic majority in the 111th. That did not solve the Medicare and, to a lesser extent, the Medicaid problem of entitlement. Is that correct?
Right. In my view, it made it much worse. It added a new liability to Medicare's, you know, $30 trillion liability. Essentially, what he's saying is that this problem can't be solved, you know, with just more of the same. What you really need is kind of a root and branch reform of Medicare itself.
Let me characterize generally, Joe, and have you correct what I understand about the Ryan proposal for Medicare. He wants to give the governors much more say into Medicare grants for their own states. Is that correct?
That's for Medicaid. That's the program for poor women and children
for
and
Medicaid.
Some childless adults.
What does he want for Medicare with regard to states?
So what he wants to do for Medicare is instead of saying we'll pay for anything, we'll instead give you, it's called premium support. So we'll give you a subsidy. It will cover basically a basic plan at the start. If you want something more generous, you pay out of pocket. But the benefit is that then you have consumers caring about the marginal cost of their own care, and that's going to start to restore market forces to healthcare.
I actually think the argument on competition is one that resonates because I think it's rooted in people's real experience. My question is, if you play this plan out, doesn't it end up, because of these provisions, backing up into arguments about rationing and therefore open to accusations about death panels? If not, why not?
Well, you know, you can either allocate resources in two ways. You can do it through price signals and individual decisions, or you can do it through brute government force. That choice is inexorable in any kind of economic decision. So what Ryan is saying is we the tax system and Medicare system as it exists now can't continue on its present course. So what society needs to do is make a choice, a deliberate choice about whether we're going to try to restore market stealth care, or we're just going to continue down the same path of essentially central planning. I think when the choice is couched that way, it's a debate we need to have. Joe, we have to have it.
Joe, you write that, or the Wall Street Journal writes, that this concept governs the federal employee health benefits program, which ensures that everyone from postal workers to members of Congress, and the same is true for several large university systems and CalPERS, the benefits program for public workers in California. And these are all successes, and that's what the Medicare program proposed by Mr. Ryan would look like. Is that correct?
That's right. This is an idea that's been kicking around since the late 70s. Health economist at Stanford named Lane Enthoven has been pushing this essentially for his entire career. He designed the Stanford Health Program, which has been much better than other large universities. It governs federal employees. Some large businesses use this type of system. So it is a big change, and I think what Paul Ryan is trying to do is saying this is the starting point. This is my alternative to the status quo. But we do need to talk about this.
Joe, there's no doubt about it that Paul Ryan's policy-oriented approach to politics is refreshing. He gets coined, you know, the words are courageous and ambitious and all of this. But in its essence, it's still a political proposal which will be met with a political response. And don't you think that the Democrats will simply respond to this proposal, much like Republicans responded to Obama's health care proposal, which is really to not offer much of a plan in response, but to start tearing it apart with terms like death panels and other things like that?
Well, no, I mean, that's always a risk when you're getting into entitlement politics. This was true in the mid-90s when Gingrich proposed something like this. Not as familiar, but I know it happened to Reagan as well, and it goes with the territory. I think one thing that Republicans did very poorly was they said you shouldn't take this money out of Medicare that Medicare doesn't have in order to spend on a new health care program. But a lot of people just said, you know, the unsophisticated version of the argument was, you shouldn't, you know, take money away from granny. So I think Republicans need to start working to explain this in a compelling way and restore some of the credibility that they did lose in the previous healthcare debate.
But I would think
of this as like part two.
And I think that, you know, to be specific about the left wing's fear mongering on these subjects, I think it was cat food and throw grandma under the bus. But I wonder, as you've been studying this, you know, there are going to be a number of competing proposals that are put out there. And the Gang of Six has been working on a Senate proposal, ostensibly based on the Simpson-Bowles Commission, which Ryan borrowed from greatly as well. Where do you understand that overlapping to be specifically, or especially, but not exclusively, on the issue of Medicare and Medicaid reform?
I think it's hard to say. You know, there are ways to make the Ryan plan more acceptable to Democrats. There are policy tweaks that can be added. There are other ways, I think, to reform Medicare to drive down prices. I think what has to happen is the status quo is unsustainable. And so we have to start making real reforms to the program, or else it's not going to be there for the next generation.
Joe, you write that Medicare's unfunded liabilities for the next 75 years, at 2085, are $31 trillion. Does the White House refute that? Do the Democrats speak to that scale of imbalance?
No, you know, just so your listeners know what an unfunded liability is it's the expected cost of the program minus the taxes that are on the books to pay for that. So, $30 trillion is a lot of money, and that's a conservative figure. That's from the Medicare trustees.
You win the understatement award.
It's actually more money than Gaddafi has. That's how much money it is.
I mean, that's several times the size of the entire economy in a given year. So if you don't acknowledge that problem, the scale of the problem, then it's pretty hopeless. And you know, when people call Ryan courageous and bold, and certainly the pundit class has been laying it on pretty thick, but one thing he's radically honest. He doesn't sugarcoat the extent of our fiscal problems, and that's why he's proposed such a major and fundamental change to the system.
Except, Joe, there's one thing about it that I don't think is necessarily fundamentally honest, which is when he talks about the federal government contributions to Medicare and Medicaid and that they are going to grow at the rate of no more than the rate of inflation, that's just not true. And that's just ignoring the problem. And he asked the CBO to score the plan that way. So I would take a little bit of issue. I think what Ryan's going to see as we move into the coming weeks is that people are going to start picking up some of those assumptions and start taking his proposal out, apart a little bit more.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. When he was on the deficit commission, the premium support would grow by the same amount as GDP plus one. You could also do it indexed to specifically the growth of medical costs. So I don't think that number is going to stick around, and there's certainly some playing around with the budget conventions in that number. But again, I think that the way to think of this is for people to start thinking about deep and structural change. Because if you don't do that, then we're just going to muddle through and eventually have some sort of major fiscal crisis.
Joe, a prediction here, right at the end. The president's speech, is he going to get Granny back up from under the bus and dust her off and propose that she's at risk from the extremist Republicans? Is he going to use that line, Joe?
I think Fannie has a way of coming back and a lot more political life. And I think we will see that stick around.
Yes, psycho in modern drama. One more time. I'm sorry. Psycho is too old of an Alfred Hitchcock movie. I cannot assume you all to know, but Granny starred in that movie as well. John Avlon of Newsweek and CNN, Tegan Goddard of Political Wire, Joseph Rago writing for the Wall Street Journal editorial board on healthcare. I'm John Batchelor.